the journey to leadership is anything but conventional. Join Justin Gray as he talks with badass leaders from across the globe to discover where they came from and the drive that got them to where they are today. Welcome. This is Driven & Co.
So hello and welcome again. This is Justin Gray, founder, CEO of LeadMD. And once again, you're on the Driven & Co. podcast. Today, I'm joined by another awesome entrepreneur. Pleased to welcome Anand Iyer with us here today. Anand is the founder and CEO of Trusted. Anand, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
So before we get started here, let's give everyone just a little bit of a foundation on who you are and what Trusted does. So what's the elevator pitch on Trusted?
Well, Trusted is we like to call it a managed marketplace for childcare. It's a great way for parents to find highly qualified vetted caregivers and for caregivers to find quality work and great vetted families to work with.
So obviously a big need for that in the marketplace when you're trusting someone with your child, which is a new area that I find myself in as well with a 6-month-old at home.
That's right.
Thank you very much. So obviously a big life change and you start dealing with things like, who am I going to leave this child with? How am I going to trust that individual with this new care package that I have? So big need for that. And I think your journey to this business and to providing that service is a fairly unique one, but one that's rooted in kind of understanding the needs of the market, to say the least. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, what an average day looks like for you at Trusted before we get into how this whole thing came about.
Sure. The average day, is hardly average, but it really depends on the day of the week, I'd say, to be honest with you. So typically, I like to front load sort of analytics and just looking at data as I'm coming in and thinking about like how things are trending. And you know, we tend to be very data driven here at the company. So I'd say if it's sort of the beginning of the week, I'd probably be spending most of my time looking at the data and trying to analyze patterns. And then through the course of the day, you know, towards the beginning of the week, it'll lean towards product management, product development, product engineering, which is sort of my passion and forte. And I'd say through the latter half of the week, you know, the average notion sort of changes a little bit. I'll spend a little bit more time with my co-founder in operations and some nitty gritty. I mean, we experiment and test with a lot of different things here. I'd say that a large portion of it really comes from, as you mentioned, right, trying to leave your child with an individual. So product development is one of our strengths, but really sourcing, bringing on board, training and up-leveling our caregiver base is probably one of the most important things we do here. So we spend a lot of time on that, and I try to do that towards sort of the middle or latter half of the week after a certain set of meetings that happen. So I'd say the average sort of varies depending on the day of the week, but I'd say in general tends to be based on analytics, product development, and operations that is really focused on sourcing and training our caregivers.
So that's interesting. So you guys actually get involved on the caregiver side as well. You're not just kind of providing the handshake. You're helping them for them to improve that service.
That's right. So, and I was remiss in not fully, you know, going into the elevator pitch, but for those of you sort of familiar with the terminology, we like to think ourselves as what we call like full stack childcare, right? So, basically the handshake or matchmaking is crucial and critical. But at the same time, there's so many things that happen after you've found someone, right? And right. From ensuring that they show up on time to that they're qualified to do what they say they can do. And if it's a great match, then ensuring that over time, the caregiver knows how to adapt to the child, right? Which is, as you're probably in the thick of it right now, but, a 3-month-old is very different from a 6-month-old to a year old to 2 years old, and their milestones change. And how do we ensure that the caregiver is up to speed with these various different milestones that a child hits? So we go sort of everything beyond matchmaking into scheduling, into payments, into in-app conveniences, whether it's live video or geolocation, to up-leveling of our caregivers. So there's a lot that happens beyond the match, and that's where we spend a lot of our time.
That's awesome. Yeah, I definitely want to drill into, you know, kind of the, I hate to say algorithm when we're talking about something like this, but yeah, how you match those individuals together. So I definitely want to come back to that.
Sure.
But before we dive too much into what's going on right now, let's get in the Wayback Machine and kind of talk about what led you to becoming an entrepreneur. So when you were a kid, what'd you want to be when you grew up?
You know, that's a really good question. So there's sort of two parts that answer really. And the first of which, you know, it's somewhat tongue in cheek. And I think I still tell some of my friends this, but I remember when I was really young, and I think when I first started taking the school bus into school, our bus driver was just like the happiest individual on the planet. Right? And he was just like really happy driving.
That's a hell of a job, number one. I would never want to be my own bus driver.
Exactly.
Just knowing what we put that guy through.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, but then this guy just seemed so in the thick of it. And like, you know, he really enjoyed it. He used to whistle all the time and, you know, it just had a really good time driving us to school. And I just, and of course, as a young kid, I was just fascinated by the fact that he could drive. I wanted to be a bus driver. That was when I was like maybe 7 years old, I think. But obviously, you know, I think I realized to your point how challenging that job could really be. And my fascination sort of turned towards airplanes and flying. So when I think for the longest time, my memories, and even so far as going into high school, I really wanted to be an airline pilot. And I, you know, I used to have a lot of Thai planes and models that my friend and I used to build, and we used to get into flight simulation, games and software. So, that was really sort of what I wanted to be. And then, you know, as I got more fascinated with the concept of engineering and physics, I really wanted to be an aeronautical engineer so that I wouldn't be the one flying all the time, but like building the nitty gritty of an airplane,
right,
and autopilot software. You know, this was in the mid 90s when, and then the computer, I think it was Windows 95 had just come out, and that sort of like opened up my eyes to this whole other world of like computers and connected computers. So, you know, I think the third sort of, you know, avatar of what I wanted to be ended up becoming sort of a computer engineer. And that's what I ended up pursuing through school.
So from bus driver to aeronautical engineer to computers,
right?
That's one hell of an early life journey there. So eventually, so you went to Purdue, correct?
That's right.
And so did you go for, you know, engineering, or what did you, how'd you study, you know, computers at that time?
Yep. So I went to Purdue for my, you know, to get my degree in computer engineering, which was a degree that was focused very much on like the hardware part of things, basically microprocessor design. That's what I actually got my degree in. You know, it was really interesting. Even as I went to school, I was very much interested in, and you know, Purdue actually has a great aeronautical engineering program. I almost picked Purdue because I felt like at some point I wanted to pursue this alternate career.
There's a fallback there, right?
There's a fallback, exactly. Which is, I mean, you know, computer engineering is hard enough, let alone trying to, you know, have a fallback and trying to go into an even more difficult program. So that never materialized. But yes, to answer your question, I did end up getting a degree in computer engineering.
And so, yeah, I mean, to look at kind of your online resume, you've chose that path and you were full steam down, you know, working at Microsoft. So it seems like you were definitely living that dream to some extent.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say that I sort of moved up the stack a little bit where at Cisco, I'll take that back. So at Cisco, I was definitely sort of focused on the very low level hardware bits, you know, writing software for this very low level hardware. And then, yeah, from then on up, I just sort of moved up the stack, you know, trying to write more application level software and learning about that. But yeah, I think the trajectory sort of changed from what, you know, from a very hardware focused career to something that's a little bit more software based. I think that's sort of where I found my passion and where I'm in the thick of it right now.
But at some point that passion kind of you hit the pause button on it, correct?
For sure. Yes. Yeah, it was for, it came with a sequence of, you know, things that had happened in the background, you know, personally with my family. And, but yes, I definitely took a break and needed to really focus on what was important to our family at the time, which was really our family. And that led to other things. But yes, to your point, I did have to take a little break from the career.
And so, you know, you did something that I think is super brave to do, and you still don't find a lot of dads doing it, right? Which is becoming a stay-at-home dad. So how was that decision? And you know, like, what was it like to have to make a decision like that?
I'd say it was honestly became pretty easy to make that decision. And what sort of led to that was, you know, some of the problems that my wife and I actually had finding childcare. So we'd had our daughter at the point and she was just, you know, just about 6 months old. And we went through the whole gamut. And I'm sure you're sort of in the thick of this right now, which is everything from, you know, helping my wife ramp back up to go back to work, which means we needed someone part-time, mm-hmm. to finding someone full-time, to finding the occasional babysitter. It was all sort of challenging for us. And, you know, as a working couple living in a big city with, you know, very little family nearby, it became a challenge. So, and at some point we actually had, well, unfortunately we had a couple of bad experiences, which, you know, was totally eye opening. Right. And then suddenly, and I'm sure you can relate to this, but suddenly there's this new human being at home. You have to try to, you know, you're trying to connect to this person, yet, you know, I was at the time I was working at another startup, and, I felt like I was very disconnected from what was really happening at home. I was doing my wife a huge disservice. To me, I felt like nothing had changed pre-baby and post-baby. And that's really not how it's supposed to be. And then once these sort of like a couple of bad experiences or things that we encountered, I immediately decided to course correct and realize that, you know, this is huge, right? This is, my daughter was only going to be 6 months, you know, once in her life. And there's a huge opportunity for me to bond with her and spend more time with her. So that made this decision really easy, to be honest with you.
So as I said, I mean, I admire the decision greatly. So at some point though, so you're at home at this point and obviously involved in one of the other hardest jobs on the planet, right? Which is raising a human being. But you decided to kind of come back and solve this problem for other people that were probably going through the same thing, correct?
Correct. And it was one of those things where it was sort of staring us in the face. And I guess the two things that I sort of relied on were, one, the fact that, to your point, I was spending a lot of time at home and I was spending a lot of time with my daughter. I was also spending a lot of time with caregivers. So I was effectively our nanny, right? So I was with my daughter at playgrounds and parks and museums and what have you, and speaking with a lot of the caregivers. And I learned a lot about how they thought about this marketplace, because for us, it's a very concrete problem. And I think we can relate to it as parents, but it's hard to put yourself in the shoes of someone who's watching a child, right? Because that's a very formal transactional relationship, yet they spend so much time with other people's children. It was sort of fascinating to do that. Also to think about sort of their motivations and motives to want to do something like this, right? How did they get uploaded? How did they get promoted? How do they learn? And if I had to just lean on my experience at Microsoft, which was massive for me. I mean, they treated me and my co-founder, we both met when we were working at Microsoft together, but I felt like it was such an awesome sort of petri dish for us to learn and grow. And that sort of analogous environment did exist, right? Outside of, you know, the amazing work that Microsoft HR did to ensure that individuals like us could grow in their careers. So my thought process was, wow, there's this person who's going to be spending so much time with my daughter, whether it's at home because we needed someone at home, or if it was in a classroom environment, how did they grow? How did they really think about their jobs, and how can we ensure that they feel happy doing what they do? So those were sort of like the two things that I'd say that on the personal front helped me. And then of course I was sort of leaning on my experience having done another marketplace company and you know, learning the vernacular about how to run a marketplace startup and all the metrics you look for to gauge success. And then I felt like this idea was sort of staring us in the face that, you know, it was and continues to be an extremely difficult thing to build, but it just needed to be done. So that's how, you know, went from, you know, crazy startup job to no job to crazy startup job again.
Yeah. And there's an aspect in there that I just find is, well, at least to me, it seems very unique. I've never seen really this approach taken in a lot of marketplace environments, but you're really, you've got two true consumers of this app, right? Yep. Like you've got obviously the parent, which is the one that we would most typically think, like we used an app to find a dog walker, like, you know, years ago and so on. And I thought that was really interesting, but it was all centered around, you know, the individual that's looking for pet care. It wasn't really centered around, or at least didn't appear to be, growing the career and really kind of empowering the caregiver as well. So that's a really interesting angle to take here. What made you start to focus on that? Is that just kind of the exposure to, you know, all these different nannies and caregivers that you had exposure to as you were out with your daughter?
Yes, definitely. I mean, first of all, I'd say that the need was very close to home. Although I was at home with my daughter, and I felt like all the requisite stats on the personal front are going up, right? So, for example, I think there was a study that had come out that said that, you know, fathers spend about something like 2.7 hours on a typical workday with their children, right? And that number is like staggeringly higher, even for working moms, right? So, and you know, there's a Pew reports that talk about, you know, how much time fathers spend with their children. It's like 46% of fathers say they're not spending enough time with their children, right? And that number is exactly half for mothers. Anyhow, so all that being said, I felt like all the requisite stats on the home front are going up. Personally, I felt like we'd hit a great balance. In fact, overcorrected a little bit. But of course, you know, there was this itch to get back and do something, given all the things that I'd learned, and how do we sort of influence the rest of the community and the rest of the marketplace to do the right thing with a new experience, right? So I'd say the first sort of thing that comes to mind is that I felt like we could have solved something more direct for our family, because we needed caregivers, we needed babysitters. So it started off being very hacky. In fact, I'll say that, you know, even to take a step back, the first avatar of Trusted wasn't really Trusted at all. It was something called Bliss. Bliss was an app that couple, or actually it wasn't really an app, quote unquote app, that couples could use to find sort of full-fledged date night experiences. And the idea there was that, you know, I'd overcorrected, I was staying at home a lot. We trusted no one, right? So no other human being other than my wife or I watched our daughter, and which obviously strained the relationship a little bit. So between my wife and I, so we said we shouldn't get out more. This is getting a little ludicrous now. We need to get out, spend more time with each other, rekindle the relationship. So the idea with Bliss was, how can we find a great qualified sitter to watch your child and help you, you know, once we learn a little bit about the couple, how can we help you get out of the house more, whether it's sporting events or concerts or plays or anything else or movies? How do we create experiences that help you get out of the house more and spend more time with one another, which could, you know, just long lasting impact on, you know, how you work with your child and how you work with each other at home. And then the quick learning that came out of that, I think we ran that experiment. Viv and I did that for maybe about 2 months. The quick learning, and with a small number of like maybe a dozen couples, and the quick learning that came out of that was, look, we've got the rest of the stuff figured out. We need childcare. The issue isn't finding what to do. The issue is with childcare. So we quickly realized that that's what we need to go build, and that the other services out there were sort of deficient. And so long answer to your question is that it immediately took the learnings that we had from my personal experience and my past experience, and decided to build Trusted with Viv.
And so, yeah, you bring up another aspect there that we hear all the time, which is, you know, should I bring in a co-founder? What's the dynamic like between co-founders? I guess, first and foremost, how did you find another individual to start a business with?
Yeah. So Vivian and I have known each other for, I want to say it's coming up on a decade now. We don't exactly know when it is that we met, but we started working together at Microsoft back in the day. Viv is, she's, for all intents and purposes, I mean, calling her a co-founder is sort of underselling it, but she's really like a sister. And we even back in the day, we worked very closely together at Microsoft, and, you know, she's just a fantastic human being. I knew that I wanted to work with her again someday in some capacity. So when I was at home, and our paths diverged after Microsoft, so we both left. I left her, I want to say in 2010, and I think she left maybe a year or two after that. But we'd always been in touch. We knew we wanted to work together. And several years later, it was sort of a no brainer because I started talking to her about being at home, about job opportunities, about life and career and all sorts of things. And I immediately told her, hey, I'm thinking about this concept about like how we need to get out of the house more. And she was intrigued by it. And of course she, with her sort of phenomenal background, trying to get to answer your question more directly, but I never thought about it as convincing her really. It was more of like, hey, how do I work with Vivian on anything? Right. Right. Because she's just a great human being and she still is. And it was one of those things where no matter what we ended up doing, I felt like I it'd be fun to come in and work with her because we constantly challenge one another and we feel, we're very complimentary in terms of our skill sets as well. So it was an easy, for me at least, it was easy for me to approach and broach the idea. I would love to hear her perspective. I don't know if she feels the same about working with me, but it's been a blast. And I think we take our roles are very, very fungible and transferable, but at the same time, we're thrilled to be working together on this endeavor.
And so, it sounds like one of the big hurdles that folks often have in terms of separating responsibilities and understanding who's going to do what, it sounds like in this case, there was almost like a natural fit for each one of you there. I'm assuming that you're playing more of the technical role given your background. And what roles does Vivian fulfill there?
Yeah, it's a great question. So Viv's our COO. For that, honestly, there's a lot of different things that fall into that umbrella. And I will say that, again, our roles are very interchangeable. I, to your point, I'm very passionate about product and technology, driven by numbers. And the overlap with her is that she's also very analytical, driven by numbers. She focuses a lot on basically running the operations side of the house, which is a huge effort in and of itself. Basically, everything from acquiring to retaining our caregivers, managing our customer support team. She's also our CFO. So making sure finances and balances and everything, checks and balances there. So she's got a huge number of responsibilities. But it's really been impressive, seeing sort of the, how we've grown together, having, started a couple of years ago to where we are today and having this huge workforce of caregivers out in the field and everything. And basically that's sort of how she's managed the system or created systems and processes to ensure that, because it's so many things that we do to find our caregivers and keep them, keep them happy, to getting them paid and everything. And she manages all of that. So I probably missed about 30 different things that she does in there, but it's one of those things. When you ask me about the average day, I'm sure for her, again, she'll have to sort of reach and think about it, but there's no shortage of things to do. It was funny. One sort of anecdote, but when we first got started, we didn't really have a customer support team. It was just Viv and I doing customer support. So it'd be her getting phone calls, in the middle of the night, or, me getting phone calls when she's off duty. But that's where some of the commonality lied. But I think about some of those times and the learnings from that, which made us realize that we need to invest in a CS team. She's created a lot of process for this. And even today, she spends a lot of time onboarding. We just hired someone new in the customer support team. Yesterday, she was spending time with her, onboarding her. And that's really fascinating because, she spent a few years in Amazon after Microsoft. So she cares a lot about customer service and that shows in the app and the service every time you use it.
And so yeah, that's a really interesting point that I hadn't thought about before, but operating a caregiver marketplace, the hours of support have to be not your typical 8 to 5, right? Like most people are using this in the evenings. Do you find that to be true?
Actually, it's interesting. So I'd say about 70% of our usage actually comes during business hours, during day hours. So, and to your point, I would have guessed the same thing, right? Where we thought we'd be building something to serve sort of the, what we call the episodic, babysitting use case for couples that want to go out at night. But turns out that's definitely, there's a business there. For us, especially given the demographic we're serving, the dual income working demographic, there's this dearth of qualified caregivers who help you with either preschool hours care or after school care. And that's where a majority of our business actually comes from. So in that regard though, CS is still 24/7. There is no, there's no give there by any means, but a lot of our business does come during daytime business hours.
Yeah, and obviously, hopefully, people are using the app to get more, you know, systematic and planned around these not only one-time activities, as you mentioned, but really kind of that life cycle of care that, that takes place between the milestones that we talked about earlier. So that's awesome.
Yep, that's right.
Where are you guys at in terms of the maturity curve of the business in general? Like, do you still consider yourself a startup at this point?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're still a small team and we're pretty lean and sort of how we operate. We're about 9 people big and still, the best analogy that I can come up with that I think you would appreciate as well is that we've sort of graduated from infancy into sort of the latter stages of toddlerhood. And I think, you know, there's a long ways to go for us still. But yeah, that's sort of like, and of course, being a father and in this business, that's the best way I can relate how our, you know, how our business sort of is today.
Absolutely. So in terms of like, how many total people on the team at this point?
9.
And so you guys are still very much at that critical stage where every hire can truly impact the business at a fundamental level.
Right.
How do you make those decisions? What do you look for in folks that you're going to bring onto the team that are going to convey the same amount of care and passion that you and Vivian have?
Right. That's a fantastic question. And that's where that's actually a very important signal that we look for. I mean, and the main reason for that being that there may be so many parts of the business that someone gets attracted, that you know, someone may get attracted to, but it's the downstream sort of consequence that we worry about, right? So that, you know, in that you may be attracted to something and you may be able to come work here trusted, but will that passion sort of carry on 6 months from now, 9 months from now? And what does that retention sort of look like? And honestly, it's the same philosophy that we have on when we hire caregivers as well, right? There's really no difference in how we look at the business overall, because we really think about this as a long-term thing. There was something one of our investors had told us way back in the day, which was really interesting, kind of stuck with me, which is in the early stages of a company, you almost hire the person, you don't really hire for a role. And what he meant by that was, and I may be sort of paraphrasing it a little bit, but the idea was that, you know, if you find a great individual and they really connect with them about the business and they're so passionate about the business that they'll probably end up doing anything. They'll learn what they need to learn and they'll figure it out, but they'll help the business be successful. And that, I guess, is one of the things we look for, right? Is that, you know, how passionate are you about this business? How much do you think that you will be able to contribute by learning new things? Because a lot of us join startups because we are looking to learn something new. We're looking to apply that ourselves or maybe start our own endeavors down the road. And so that's really important. And that's actually one of the most important things that we look for. All our hires are very opportunistic. You know, we do have a lot of job postings online, but we haven't grown aggressively only because it's to your point, everyone who's come in has had a huge material impact to the company and the business. And we continue to look for those people who are truly passionate about helping the business, but also growing professionally themselves, which we think has a very sort of symbiotic effect. So, that's actually one of the most crucial things we look for. Even if there's a huge deficiency in, let's say someone we want to hire in customer support and your experience is very limited, but let's say you've been a nanny for several years, and you see this passion in childcare, you see how this business can have an impact in a career like, you know, being a nanny, then that's a great sort of check mark for us. And that's the one thing to look for.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys are in the Bay Area. So, you know, the complaint that we always hear is, you know, there's an absolute talent vacuum going on in areas like that. We see companies expanding into Denver and Seattle and Texas, Austin, and so on. How do you guys deal with that kind of, you know, I don't know if there's necessarily a talent shortage, but there's definitely an attention span shortage as it pertains to looking for organizations and on the adverse finding really great talent. How do you guys find those individuals?
Yeah, it's for us the I think there's sort of two questions that are embedded in there, and one of which is sort of a market related rollout, and the second is finding these qualified people, right? And we're in the Bay Area. We actually launched our New York market as well, and we've been in sort of soft launch mode in the LA area for some time now, and we're probably going to formalize that in the early part of next year. But we look at each market as sort of, you know, having its own huge opportunity underneath. Obviously every market's got its own dynamics. You know, for example, one of the things that we, you know, one of the indicators for us was, you know, indicators is not the right word, but one of the variables that we control in a given market is, you know, how soon a caregiver can come home, right, to be with your child.
Right.
And the area that number is 2 hours. We need a 2 hour lead time. In New York, it's the same, but in another market like LA or Seattle or Denver, for example, we feel that number could be very different. And had we not created those variables up front, it would have been really difficult for us to launch a new market because of how closely we manage the market. So we had to figure those things out before we launch a new market. So New York was a great, you know, it was initially a test bed, but now obviously it's something we take, you know, it's sort of our, you know, daily bread and butter. And I know another market would have its own set of complexities, right? And so we have to weigh this very carefully, especially given how closely we manage the market. And as far as sourcing talent goes, you know, it's been, obviously, we have our core team and we have our network of caregivers. And for the caregivers, we've always sort of leaned on nursing students, early childhood education majors or child psychology majors. And we continue to work with that talent pool. And they have their own sort of sororities that we sort of lean into, their job boards, their school job boards that we sort of been trying to leverage to try to grow the network as much as possible.
And so I look at these services and you guys have an awesome idea here. And to your point, managing the market, and certainly when you have a marketplace, it's so important to curate the talent within those marketplaces, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that, you know, I'll just use Arizona as an example here because that's where we're located. Do you think a market like in Arizona or something that is more, you know, geographically diverse and spread out can support a service like Trusted or any sort of, you know, proximity based service?
Right. That's a really good question. And I mean, I think I'd need to dig in a little bit more to understand like the demographics behind Arizona before any major metropolitan area in Arizona, right? Whether it's Phoenix or Tucson or what have you, before I can answer that question more authoritatively. But the key indicators for us are honestly, just the demographics of both sides of the marketplace, right? And density is sort of the third variable, I'd say. So we've historically been serving sort of dual income working families where they lean on a service like ours because they don't have a lot of family nearby. And so I guess that'd be the biggest question from the demand side is that, you know, what does that really look like in Arizona? And that's the first bit analysis that we do. We've done this on, you know, for a lot of other markets. In fact, a lot of the names that you mentioned. And so that does, you know, very clearly chart out our you know, market by market launch plan. And so Phoenix, we'd have to do any place in Arizona, we'd have to do the same kind of analysis. And then conversely, on the caregiver side as well, we'd look for, what does the market really look like? What do people use there today, right? And what is the propensity for a service like this to be successful there, especially given the demand and supply dynamics, right? And the last thing I'll add is also there's a huge trust factor component here, right? So when we launch in the Bay Area, I'd say that it's not easy for any parent to download an app and, you know, find someone and then trust their child with someone, you know, in short notice. But for us, we see some really staggering numbers. We see, you know, in some cases, in about 2 minutes, someone signed up, downloaded the app and booked a caregiver to come watch our child, which, you know, I wouldn't have thought that would have been the case, you know, 2 years ago. I think that time would be a lot greater. In any case, and so the last question would be, how do we test the market to see the propensity there? Because sometimes the demographics may give us some amount of data, but we may be paving the way with a new market. And the only way to do that is by testing the waters a little bit. So, you know, I wish I had a more direct answer to your question, but the first thing we'll look at is a demographic sort of makeup of both the demand and supply. And then we'll look at a few of the variables like, you know, propensity to use technology to aid a service like ours or any service that you think might make an impact there. And those would be sort of our key indicators. And then some of it, honestly, is just the gut. out, right? So we'd say, hey, we need to drive here. First we drive, and one of our investors love to say this, like, first you drive based on gut, then you drive based on data. So so then we'll lead with it and see if the data yields what we're looking for. And if so, we can double down or triple down and continue to grow the market.
Yeah, I think the main takeaway there is just exactly what you closed with there is there's always an element of feel, but there has to be a data-driven approach backing those types of decisions. So great information for our listeners. So I normally close with the whole talent. You know, how do you find talent? How do you scale a business with folks that you trust? But I'm very curious in your case on how you're doing with balance, since that's one of the items that that really drove you to take some time at home and you know, experience your daughter growing up. How are you doing with balance now that you're running a company again, which I think most people would argue is even more daunting than being in a tech company from the employee side of the house? How is that going?
It's going really well. And it's really interesting you asked that because my daughter and I, we just moved out of the city into slightly outside the city. So it's a little suburban. And so my commute time, which used to be about 8 minutes, has now gone up to about an hour and 15 minutes. And
wow,
we're par for the course here in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. But all in all, I mean, I remember reading about this way back in the day. You know, I think Sheryl Sandberg, still leaves work at 5:30 every day, right? I don't know if that's still the case, but I remember reading about that back way back when. And I do the same thing. I actually leave work closer to 5 o'clock, and I come in a little earlier. So I have enough time of work to have our meetings or get the in person work done. But I make it a point, and of course, you know, also bracing for my hour 15-minute commute back home, I try to leave just in time to spend time with my daughter. So to answer your question, I feel like I'm not spending, you know, 6 or 7 hours a day with my daughter anymore. And I don't think she wants that as a 4.5-year-old now. I think she doesn't want to see me as much, but I get a great amount of time with her. And I, you know, it's really fascinating at her age to see some of the things that she's doing. And it's, my wife was telling me the other day that, you know, she says there's a lot of personality traits that my daughter has. And she says one of the things was that my wife says that she's silly like you, that our daughter is silly like me, which I was really, you know, great. It was great for me to hear because, you know, I think every kid should have that little bit of silliness to them like I do. And I'm really glad that, you know, I'm still able to spend enough time with her for her to feed off of what my personality is like. So I think the balance is great. It can always be better because there's some nights when, you know, I need to hop on and help our customer support team, or there's something that I need to debug. But that'll never go away. But I'd say that I'm not unhappy doing any of that because it's what I signed up for. And it's the business that I really care a lot about. So it almost doesn't feel like work. It's just a part of our lives, right? In fact, I was joking to a friend of mine saying, you know, who's asking me, hey, are you going to have a second child? And I said, I already have a second child, and that's trusted. So it's very near to my heart. And, you know, we're going to obviously continue to push the limits, but at no point am I going to compromise the balance. It's a very good question. And, you know, I guess the short answer is that my dad instilled me a long time ago that it's really important to work hard if and no matter what you do, and don't sign up for something if you don't feel like you're going to work hard at it. So I work extremely hard, but I also make sure that I can spend enough time with my daughter and more importantly, my wife as well, which is actually, you know, it's equally important, if not more, to have that, you know, one-on-one time with her. So the balance is great. And then, you know, we still manage to take time off with one another and make sure that there's the occasional weekend that we're able to spend more time with one another. But we monitor that very, very closely. So we're excited about the progress we've made since, you know, given relative to where we were about 3 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Data driven. Yes. So on it, that's, you know, thank you so much for sharing the story with us. If people want to check out the Trusted app and get more familiar with how they can utilize that in their own life, where can they go?
Yeah, you can visit our website or you can just Google Trusted. Our website is usetrusted.com. Or you can just shoot me a note if you have any other questions that come up as well. I'd be happy to talk to anyone who's interested in pursuing an entrepreneurial sort of effort.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you for joining us here today. It's a great story and, you know, a great path of wanting to, you know, find a balance in life. So really appreciate you sharing the story with us.
Thank you so much. It was great chatting with you.
And thanks everyone again for tuning into the Driven & Co. podcast. You can find past episodes over at leadmd.com/marketplace. And always remember to trust in the unconventional.
Thanks for listening to the Driven & Co. podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. To hear more, visit leadmd.com/marketplace.